Well, thank you for the kind introduction. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, friends. It's been a fantastic opportunity for me to do this review because 4 years ago in 2010, I suggested there should be a catapult program, and this was an opportunity to find out how well it, it has developed over the years. But before I do this, let me just put this into the bigger context of science translation. And so what I really want to talk about is what are universities for? Then look at some of the problems with science translation and give you an idea how out of proportion the amount of money that we spend on science, where we're excellent, and the amount of money that we spend on translation, where we're not, how big that mismatch is. Then go into the review itself and then just have one slide on what to do next and what, you know, the really big new challenges are. So what are these universities for? Well, everybody, of course, agrees that teaching actually is, and producing the students, is by far the most important thing that universities do. Just to give you a feeling for how important that is compared with the income from IT, from IP, the ratio is roughly 100 to 1. So, you know, when people get too excited about the value of IP that universities produce, the value of the earning power of students every year is about 100 times that value of the IP. People also agree that research, of course, is a key mission that we've given our universities, and that is going particularly well in the UK. Since Lord Sainsbury, however, universities have a third mission, which is supported by the third stream of funding, the high funding, the higher educational innovation funding, and it's all about science translation. So let me go a little bit more into that. All of you, I'm sure, are very proud that Britain has four universities in the top 10, Cambridge normally leading, there's Imperial, and there is UCL, and there is another university to the west of Cambridge, whose name I always forget. And then if you measure the citations, we're second only to the US. So we're ahead of the rest of our pack, the countries that we normally compare ourselves with. And if you do it per pound spent, we're even number one in the world. However, our spending on translation, on translating this this wonderful science that we produce is disproportionately low. And here is my killer slide. Here is the amount of money that various countries spend on translation compared with us. And I'd like to point out two countries in particular. So this is the amount we spend on catapults here. This is what Germany spends on Fraunhofer's. And the top one, just to pick a random one, is Finland. And Finland spends roughly the same amount as us on translation. But Finland, for those of you who know it, is even smaller than the UK. Science translation, how does it work? Well, it mainly works through the transfer of people. It doesn't necessarily need the professor who's leading the group, but it's got to be somebody in that group that takes the technology and all the know-how and does something with it, say in a startup or in a larger company. And I would just like to point out at the different types of scientific breakthroughs that there are, and I've just divided it into evolutionary breakthroughs and revolutionary breakthroughs. One is appropriate for licensing, the other is much more appropriate for startups. Of course, we need venture capital and the high funding. So the archetypal evolutionary development, of course, are jet engines, and we're actually doing rather well with that with Rolls-Royce, which you know, has done fantastically well in keeping up with the latest development in jet engine design, and I'll come back to that when I talk about the high-value manufacturing catapult. But surprisingly, when there are revolutionary breakthroughs like electric cars, it is not the mighty German car industry that's got the best electric car in the world at the moment. To everybody's amazement, it's a Californian startup called Tesla, because they're a famous Austrian. This car was conceived from the ground up as an electric car. And I think it's that willingness to leave the past behind and just think about these new technologies in a holistic way that has brought about this really rather amazing success. Because we all admire Mercedes, BMW, Volkswagen, Audi. Tesla now has a market cap that's more than half that of Mercedes or BMW. So in a very small number of years, they've created an enormous amount of value. But now to the core of the talk, which are these catapults, which I was hoping to call Maxwell centers, but there was a more modern name that was chosen finally to win out. And these were the criteria for why we should use taxpayers' money to help with creating intermediate institutions between universities and industry to help with the technology transfer. Well, number one, it's got to be a big deal. Unless it's measured in billions, why should we spend taxpayers' money on it? It wouldn't move the needle for UK PLC. The second is, this is an initiative not to fill in holes but build on mountains. So we really have, in fact, this is a quote that I've gripped from Alec Brewers, who used to say this, and I think he's absolutely right. The third criterion is that it has to be a platform technology that benefits a whole sector, not a single company. And lastly, but not least, we've got to find a way of exploiting these results for UK PLC. And that often causes problems with politicians, because the knee-jerk reaction is, if we develop it in the UK, we should keep the whole value stack in the UK. And this is the best way of killing any global opportunity, because if it is a multi-billion dollar opportunity, it is normally global in nature. If it is global in nature, it is unlikely that every part of the value stack is best done in this country. So what's the right strategy? The right strategy is to pick a high-value part of that value stack, hopefully the highest value part of the value stack, say, this is ours. If anybody wants to play in there, they have a fight on their hand, and we're going to win it. But all the other parts might well be best done elsewhere in the world. So having this connectivity with the rest of the world, I think, is a very important part, even of a national initiative. So I now come to the seven catapults that exist. It's high-value manufacturing, cell therapy, satellite applications, offshore renewable energy, digital economy, future cities, and transport systems. And there are two new catapults that we hope to launch next year, one on energy and one on precision medicine. They're located all over Britain. There are two that pre-existed the catapult initiative. That's the high-value manufacturing one and the satellite one. In fact, the first one was the high-value manufacturing one, and I went to see Vince Cable and complained about it and said, this is not what I had in mind, because it was actually seven different centres, not one, and I strongly recommended that there should just be one centre for one sector. I must admit, having visited them, I've changed my mind, and there's a very simple reason for that. I, as a physicist, was a sort of a bear with a simple mind, thinking that manufacturing was something monolithic, where in reality, of course, different manufacturing technologies are so different from each other. Say, take carbon fiber, reinforced carbon fibers, and the forging of metal, that it would be inappropriate to just have one center. It was a bit of an expedient thing for government to do, because it coincided with the with closing down the RDAs, which funded these centres, of course, and the catapult money, quite honestly, was the only pot of money available. But having visited them, I think they're actually quite appropriate. manufacturing centre. So let me tell you one story, which is the one of Rotherham, where I saw turbine blades being made, and I was just so impressed by that. These are little stubby things because they're the first blades just after the combustion chamber. They live in an environment, in a temperature environment, where the temperature is higher than the melting point of the blades. And you might wonder, well, how can they survive in this environment at all? And the answer is there are little holes that blow cold air over the surface of it. And that makes them survive in that environment. But if they fly through volcanic ash, and some of you might have wondered about this, the little holes clog up, and the things melt, and that's bad for the engine. So that was really a surprise in terms of, and it's a single crystal. This is very, very hard to do. I mean, I'm a chip head, so I know about single crystals that you make out of silicon. But making them out of metal of that size is most impressive and gave, of course, Rolls-Royce one of the advantages of reducing the power consumption of engines, which is critical in the efficiency stakes. And people actually base their buying decisions on how efficient an engine is. My second visit was to the second catapult that has pre-existed, which was... there's one more story to tell about high-value manufacturing, because one of the big discussions was whether catapults ought to be involved in the skills-based, in helping train young people in these advanced techniques. And I came across a number of young people that were trained up there at the Catapult Center, and it was wonderful to see that they really appreciated being able to get their hands on the latest lathes. You know, I asked two young chaps that were, I don't know, 15 or 16 year old, which lathe, there were lots of lathes there, down there, which ones they preferred. And they say, the NC one. I said, well, why do you like the NC one? We can program it. And I said, why do you like programmers? We can't screw it up, he says, because they wouldn't let us. The programs wouldn't let us. You know, it's easy to break a tool if you just do it by hand. So it was just nice to see these young people engage with the latest technology, which they wouldn't have access to if it was at their local polytech university. So the satellite one was also a big surprise because the satellite... which has this wonderful database of satellite images of Britain, has created clean interfaces so that lots of companies can actually relate to this image bank and write programs that take advantage of the fantastic database that we've produced over many years. In fact, there are so many of them, they had to build an incubator. Now, normally it's the other way around. People get very excited about putting an incubator somewhere and hoping that they will come. Here it's the other way around. They actually had to build one because there were too many small companies on their site. So very positive in terms of the SME investment. So for those two that pre-existed, one can already show a very clear results that are very impressive. One of the most impressive results is one of the main criteria for catapults, which is the funding model, that a third should come from government, a third from industry. I think it's very important to have it not more than a third, because if it's more than a third, industry might as well do it themselves, but also not less than a third, because if less than a third, then you aren't really sure whether industry really wants it. And in the case of high-value manufacturing, it's actually 40% of the money that already comes from industry. So I think it's only appropriate to see if we can actually increase the funding that we have for high-value manufacturing. And then there are five new ones. So let me just give you a quick feeling for maybe a couple of them. Cell therapy is one that I was particularly taken by. It's located on the 12th floor in Guy Hospital. Two floors above, we've got Fiona Watts, one of our superstars in cell and stem cell technology. As you've got her research lab up there. Two floors below, there are the hospital beds where the trials can take place. It's got an ideal position. The other thing that I found, not just in cell therapy, but all the other new ones, is that the quality of the teams that we've managed to attract into these catapults is absolutely outstanding, both at the chairman level, at the CEO level, and then also at the CXO level. And the cell therapy is a good example there. So let me come to the nine recommendations that I came up with visiting all these centers. So one, of course, the most obvious one is you want to support the catapults that already exist. I mean, the last thing that you want to do is, pull the plant out, look at the roots and put it back and hope that they will continue to grow. So we have to continue to support them, of course, with milestones and, of course, with reviews like this one. There has been unanimous support for the one-third, one-third, one-third funding model. And I'm also very pleased with that. It is indeed very similar to the Fraunhofer model. The proposal is to grow this network of seven catapults by about, cautiously, by one or two a year to end up with, say, 20 by 2020 and 30 by 2030. The two criticisms I have is that we need to redouble our efforts in the relationship with small and medium-sized enterprises, and that the links with universities aren't really as strong as I would like to see. And it is actually one of the differences with the Fraunhofer Gesellschaft, because what we did when we did the research for the original report, we looked at all types of intermediate institutions all around the world, Taiwan, ETRI in Korea, TNO in Holland, VTT in Finland. And what we found was that the Fraunhofer is probably the most appropriate for Britain, but it would be foolish to just import everything they do, because Britain has a very different structure to Germany. And one of the differences is that all the Fraunhofers are headed up by university professors. But German university professors are not the same as UK university professors. So those that head up the Fraunhofers have typically spent many years in industry, which is unusual in the UK. So we decided to have it industry-led, which I think was the right decision for the catapults that we have. However, we do have to have more emphasis in the university relationships. So that's my recommendation number six. Number seven is an exercise that I hope we can also support at the Royal Society with the Standing Committee on Science, Industry and Technology, which I co-chair with Simon Campbell, to come up with new KPIs, with more detailed KPIs, because clearly people will do whatever is necessary to score high on the evaluation criteria that we set them. And I think this needs some thought, and also some more detailed collection of data. So we'll be working together with the Open Data Initiative, a wonderful new initiative to get access to a lot of government data easily and automatically. Catapults also have a function as a sort of neutral convener within the clusters to close the bridge between universities and industry, also in terms of the permeability of our staff. So it is still unusual for university professors to move out to industry and back, especially the and back is very difficult, because often the publication record, of course, they can't keep up when they're at industry. And maybe catapults as halfway houses to industry can help with that. And my recommendation number nine is there are quite a few initiatives that a government is producing that are catapult-like. Now, I'm not saying that everything warrants the catapult brand, but the catapult process, which has resulted in these seven catapults, has yielded a lot of experience, and I think it would be a great shame if these experiences weren't made available to the other initiatives that we have. Let me just finish off with the obvious point that none of this goes anywhere unless you have at least some of these startups, and they need entrepreneurs, and they are unusual people like Steve Jobs, not a very nice man for those of us who've known him but a genius. And what characteristics do you have there? Well, passion is really the number one thing that we look for. Unreasonable optimism that this is going to work. An ability to lead the team. And, of course, you need a bit of venture capital. So let me take a bit of a look in the future and what we might want to do in the future and where the big opportunities are. In my opinion, the biggest single opportunity I've ever come across is this $1 trillion health opportunity. Now, how do I come up with $1 trillion? It's actually not me. It's people who have analyzed this. Well, it's actually a very simple back-of-the-envelope calculation. If you look at just America, of course, dominates the health sector because they spend 20% of their GDP on health. They spend about $3 trillion a year, and a third, a full trillion at the moment, is spent on diagnostics and keeping people out of hospital, and 70% treating people who are ill. The hope is that within the next 3 to 5 years, this changes to 50-50. So you've got the most monumental change in terms of the health spend towards keeping people out of hospital. And this, of course, one hopes will be partially enabled by personalized medicine. And the personalized medicine gets increasingly strongly linked to the Internet of Things and machine learning. I think it's clear that the Internet of Things, in terms of the senses, everybody can see that this might help because we'll have so much more information about people's basic parameters like blood pressure and heart rate and respiration and skin resistance, etc. What people don't realize that in the combination of the Internet of Things and machine learning, in my opinion, the machine learning is by far the more important, because the Internet of Things will produce another deluge of data. And there are not enough people in the world to analyze these data. So we've got to have an automatic technique of doing this with. And fortunately, the computer scientists with their latest developments in machine learning have come up with just the most fabulously powerful techniques to do exactly that. So machine learning is one where I spend a lot of my time with that community. So in conclusion, I've made the point... tried to make this point for science translation being really a rather important third mission for universities, that the catapults, I think, have gotten off to a very good start, and that this opportunity of healthcare and machine learning are the ones to really look forward to. Thank you very much.